What's up, Fail Nation? Today, I've got an awesome interview that I did with Fernanda Boehm last week, and I can't wait to bring that to you. But before we get started, if you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast and leave a rating or review. That helps me know what I need to do better, as well as get this in front of as many people possible to listen to these awesome stories with our guests. Also, if you haven't followed me on Instagram, go do that right now, at Kyle Bringhurst. I'm doing weekly giveaways each time that I release a podcast episode, so you don't want to miss out on those. And I'm sharing a lot of the lessons that I've learned in my journey as well as from my guests. So without further ado, let's get to the interview.
I remember in 2016, I almost had to close shop. I had the VC of leasing fly to our headquarters saying, "You are out of business," on paper.
What is up, everyone? I'm Kyle, and I am the host and founder of the Freedom to Fail podcast and Fail Nation, a community where failing while pursuing our dreams is a positive and taking uncertain chances is celebrated. This podcast is for those who have a dream of starting a business or doing something they've always dreamed of, but have been held back by their fears. Our purpose is to share the unsuccessful stories of successful people so that you can learn how to take the first steps towards achieving your dreams. You deserve to live a life full of freedom and free of fear. Let's do this. Okay, Fail Nation, I am sitting here with Fernanda Boehm. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. So do you want to just give a little bit of an introduction of what it is that your company does?
So Boehm is a women's clothing store. I mean, we have multiple locations. We have 16 locations across 5 states and also an online presence. So what we do is, I mean, we outfit you from head to toe, everything from accessories to shoes to your dresses, tops, hats. I mean, you name it, we'll carry for women. And our demographic is anywhere from your, 18 to 35, but we're also multi-generational, so it's like the mom finds something and the daughter finds something.
Yeah. So you've actually been able to have a ton of success with this. Did I see that you started it in 2006, or what year was it that you got started with this?
So officially we opened the first store in 2007.
Okay. You guys have been around for quite a while now, and you've had a lot of success that you've been able to find. Since you started up, like you mentioned, you have stores in 5 states. You employ over 200 women, which I think is just incredible. And you guys also won the SBA of the Year for the state of Utah last year. So do you want to dive a little bit deep into the backstory of how you were able to just create this powerhouse of a company?
So actually, to even get there, we go way back to our childhood. We actually immigrated from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And we came here in 1992, straight to the state of Utah. And I was 8. My sister, who's my partner, was 9. And so we come here to the United States, right? We don't speak a lick of English. And you have all the usual struggles of an immigrant family. And unless you're an immigrant and you've been there, done that, it's really hard to explain all the challenges that you go through. And so growing up and being really young, we had to be the adults in the family. Because if you think about it, your parents are usually going to pick up the language way later than the kids pick up the language, right? And so a lot of people don't understand the processes of immigration. All they think is, well, they're taking all of our welfare. It's like, well, first of all, you have to be a citizen to even get that. So, we weren't allowed to even have any of the welfare. So one thing that we started doing to just even make a living, and that's something Brazilians do. Like, every nationality has their own niche of what they do for a living. A lot of Brazilians, usually they do cleaning, right? So we cleaned office buildings as kids with our family. And a lot of people are thinking, oh, you guys had like a little business and you made a good living. No, actually, they worked for other people at minimum wage and we went for free. So, I mean, these buildings were massive, like 5 stories high and multiple of them. So every day after school, we would go to that until midnight every single day for almost 10 years, right?
Wow.
So it felt like those days were never going to end, right? And I mean, we all knew that we had a greater purpose and there would be light at the end of the tunnel. But I mean, we did that for many years. And so, if I could show you where the poverty line is, we were probably 10 notches below, right? So, I mean, we got hand-me-downs of the people who got hand-me-downs, right? And so that's kind of, we just had to kind of live a scrappy life, and we had to be really creative with everything. So it's like, if we wanted something, we had to earn it somehow through other means. For example, when I say that, it's like I was in elementary, I couldn't see the board, right? Oh, okay. You need glasses. Okay. What do you do? And so now I'm having to find creative ways and maybe winning a fundraiser, at the school. So then maybe I can afford to buy basic needs, right? Yeah. And so that's just the life we lived. I don't feel sorry for myself, nothing like that, but that was just reality. That's all I knew, right? And so growing up, I was just a very creative child. I knew I wanted to be in the arts. And then my partner, which is my sister, she was always very analytical. So at age 11, she put together an entire spreadsheet of how my parents could indeed afford the bike. So she was always very analytical. And so, you know, fast forwarding, now we're in graduating high school. I did a lot of music. I played the violin for many years. And around college time, my sister starts saying, hey, we should go open a business, blah, blah, blah. And back then, I mean, 06, there was really no boutiques, right? You had department stores, you had a couple of chain stores, but that was it. And there was no online shopping, none of that. There was no Pinterest, Instagram. So we saw that opportunity. But at the same time, I just majored in fashion. I want nothing to do with retail. I thought, you know what? I'm going to move my life to New York, work for a couture brand, and do visual displays. I wanted to go pursue that. I didn't want to stay in Utah and do retail. And so my sister talks me into it, and I said, fine. So how we come together is I'm the right brain, she's the left brain, right? So she's very analytical, I'm very creative, and that's kind of how we divide the responsibilities in the business. So as she's talking me into it, I'm like, we have zero money. And if you understand, you grew up as poor immigrants, you don't have connections. You don't have networks of people in the business, right? Quite the opposite. So I told her, I'm like, where are we going to get the money? No one's going to lend us any money. So I decided to take out a credit card from American Express. Now, this is right before the recession really blew up, right? And they stopped lending out any sorts of money. But so I was able to get that credit card. And every month I would call in just to get that limit a little bit up to open up our first store. So now we open up our first store. My sister actually starts she's working at this company. Can I mention we both had full-time jobs? It's not like we could just walk away from our jobs. Think about it. The business just started. We can't pay ourselves, right? So as we start this first business, she's working for this company who took people's money and did real estate with it, aka it was a Ponzi scheme. So now we're taking out other loans, and there's other people too putting in money towards this that was going through her. So now all of that hits the fan and pretty much loses everybody's money. And at the time, you know, she already had a couple of children. I had no children. But now, you know, her husband's making $9 an hour. And now we can't pay ourselves. And now we opened this first concept. It was actually a fashion place. It was only a 3-month lease. And the day we opened our doors, I mean, I'm trying to get merchandising in from other places. And we decide to name it Bohm. The graphic designer's like, oh yeah, that's a good, strong name. Let's name it that. We don't know any better. Sure. So then the second we open our doors, people are walking by saying, don't go in. It looks expensive. Well, we're like, we look expensive. Like we did our build out, like on our hands and knees for 24 hours, you know, for a couple of days to make this work. Like, we literally worked around the clock to get this open. We're like, it's makeshift. How is it expensive? And everybody that would walk by would say that. And now we're thinking, oh my gosh, we completely messed up. So now you have Bohme, all caps, in black and white. It's very strong German name, right? So just for a back end, Bohm is our last name. It's from my father's side of the family. Descendants are from Germany. That's how we get that name. And so we thought, you know what? We did it all wrong. If you think about it, we're Brazilian. And actually foreigners in general, they show status in a very different way than Caucasians do in the U.S., right? Here, you want to be as casual as possible and look as if you're not even interested relaxed. In where you're going, as relaxed and laid back as possible, because that's status, right? Mm-hmm. People just assume that you have money, even though you dress down and totally relaxed. In other countries, it's not that way, right? You better have X, Y, and Z label on you. So moving on, we started to do our SWOT analysis, and we started doing really watching people. What are they dressing? Where are they going? Where are they wearing these clothes, right? And after we did that analysis, we ended up closing that store. It was only a temp lease. And I was at that point to where, okay, now we're even further in debt. I have all this inventory. What am I going to do with it?
So when you opened up that temporary thing, you ended up not making much money from it. Is that what I'm hearing?
We barely broke even.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then after we closed it, I said, this is it. Yeah. I don't want to do it anymore. It's very difficult running a business and having to keep a full-time job at the same time. And with all the hurdles, it just wasn't worth it going on.
Yeah.
And so the next thing to be very, very transparent and honest, you get to a point in your life to where you either go right or left and you have to make a decision. And so the first thing I thought, I'm going to pray about it. Is this the path for me? Is this what I need to do? And so I prayed and I got a very clear answer that I needed to get up and go back to work, and that there would be people on the other side, as in people, I say angels on the other side, that would help us carry out this plan. And so I thought, oh my goodness, okay, this is going to take all the faith I have to go back and do that again and fail again, right? And so months down the road, we open our second concept. I mean, we make everything grunge. We're like, we're going to make it as grunge as possible so people are not afraid to walk in the door, right?
Yeah.
And so, and then the first day we open the store and it's a brand new concept. It was actually down at the University Mall. And I told my sister, I said, Vivian, I said, you need to go to the bank. You need to get some cash to put inside the till. And she's like, cash for the till? There is no cash. I'm like, well, how are we going to give change to the people that there is no cash? Like, seriously, there's nothing. I was like, oh, shoot. So we opened the store that day, and it was Labor Day 2008, and people had exact change, and those that didn't paid with a credit card. So it was like the perfect day. From then, we decided that we wanted to be a multi-store. So we didn't just want to be in one mall. We knew we wanted to be a chain. And so we grew from store to store to store. Other challenges came with that because now, you know, you're having to do the build outs. So we're literally doing the build outs ourselves, right? We can't afford a contractor. I mean, some of those stores are, you know, over $500,000 to put together, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had our own saws. We built our own cabinetry. We did our own painting. Like, you name it, we have done it. Like, we would read on books or watch YouTube, like how to put a blade inside a table saw, right? And how to get the best finishes and what machinery do you need to paint cabinetry. So like, we were schooled in all that, but so going through it, as we opened store to store to store, we ended up being number one sales per square foot. And we just knew what the customer wanted. And we went through many years of phases and, you know, we had our ups and downs. And so yeah. And through that, I mean, today we have over 200 employees and counting. And our web business obviously has exploded along with everybody else's during COVID.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, well, what makes your business so successful? And I think, well, we really read into our customers, right? What do they want? And even having stores in different states, it's quite challenging because what sells here doesn't sell in another zip code,
for sure,
right? So we have various different demographics. And our thing is we offer a good value for the product. People don't know this, but we actually design a whole lot of our product, right? We work with manufacturers. We have hours and hours just to make sure that the stitch is the right color, that the button is the right color. Like, we go through all that design process that a lot of people don't know in the backstage. And so we really put a lot of care and effort to like every design that comes through the door.
I want to touch on that a little bit because you said with your first temporary concept, you didn't really have much success. You barely broke even, but then you go to this new location and you started crushing it, became the highest seller per square foot and all that stuff. Do you think the difference between that, between your failure and your success, was your ability to start putting in the time with your customers to evaluate what they wanted? Or what do you think contributed to you being able to find success after you went back at it again?
I mean, there's two different mindsets, right? There's the people that said, you know what? I have a vision. Everybody else better believe it or else, right?
Yeah.
Or you could learn from your mistakes and see what your clientele is telling you. So I think we did more of that to where we said, hey, you know what? What does the customer want? What are they sensing? Like, what's their frequency, right? Let us read that. And at the same time, I mean, I'm happy we failed. I mean, that sounds terrible, right? But it's like in business, you want to fail as much as you can.
Yes.
At first, and learn from that.
And fail fast too, so you don't waste all your money.
Exactly. That too.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing about money. A lot of people, all they want to do is brag. Oh, look how much money I've raised. Right? I've never put in a dime in my pocket inside the company, right? And we didn't raise money, but we were very creative in how we used our money. So instead of just raising a bunch of money and giving away all your equity, which is easy to do, right? You can scale a business that way. We like to control.
I think that's a really good point because, I mean, you look on Shark Tank, for example. So many of these small companies that are just getting started, they go on Shark Tank, they look to raise money and get an investment from the sharks. And so I think that that is what a lot of young entrepreneurs see as the route to success mm-hmm. in a business, that they have to sell their company in order to be able to grow it. But you guys went the complete opposite way. You bootstrapped and you really funded your company from your own pockets, basically. You kept the money inside of your business and were able to reinvest that in the growth. And I think that that is so important because eventually, like if you're just getting started, when you reach out to one investor, you may say, hey, I need this much money. I'll give you 20%. And you're like, sweet, I still own 80%. I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. But then you run out of that money. So you have to keep raising money and giving away more and more. And eventually you're not the decision maker. So the company that you started with your brand and your vision now is not under your control because you've given up so much of the company. So I think that that point mm-hmm. that you make is mm-hmm. just so important. Just making sure to keep as much of the company for yourself so that you can do what you want with that company.
Exactly. Completely agree.
So I want to touch on a little bit of that in-between route from when you started to where you are now. Obviously, my podcast is called Freedom to Fail, and you've touched a little bit on that first initial failure. But I want to see as well, what would you say is your biggest failure that has happened in the time since then that you've had to learn from?
Geez, there's so many. Obviously, the bigger the company, the bigger the failure is, right?
Yeah.
Right?
A much
okay,
bigger scale.
Okay. So, I mean, every lever you pull, something's going to happen. And keeping that, the business model, sustainable year after year after year, right? It is very difficult, especially in retail. Retail, you have to be smart every single day, okay? It's not like, let's say I'm selling tires. Tires are black. They are round. Year after year, that is not going to change, right? In fashion, especially in women's fashion,
yeah.
It's changing on a weekly basis, right? And you better come up with a menu every single week and it better sell out and it better taste amazing, right? Mm-hmm. So to speak. But in clothing. And so, oh goodness, that's a hard question. And as far as the failure, managing the inventory in our scale is huge, okay? We have failed, I mean, so many times, and it's how you bounce back from it. I remember in 2016, I almost had to close shop, okay? I had the VC of leasing of, you know, a lot of our centers that we're in fly to our headquarters saying, you are out of business on paper. Like, we had minutes on hand, right?
Yeah.
And he just laughed. Oh, you're going to be bankrupt by the end of the month. I'll give you 30 days, right? And so we said, you know what? Give us 6 months and I'll turn the ship around, right? And when your balance sheet looks like crap, no one's going to give you a dime. It's like nobody wanted to touch us. We were like the plague, right? I had 6 months to turn around that ship. And when you're going through those hard times, morale is down, right? The most important thing that I've learned that you can have above money is creativity, mm-hmm. right? Once creativity leaves your business, you are doomed. You can have a bazillion in the bank, right? If you do not have creativity in one way or another, like your business is doomed.
For sure.
So we took that 6 months and we just dialed in our inventory, right? And we just turned it and we put in all of our efforts to making it to the next season because, you know, retail is very season oriented. And man, we just shot up and I made all the right moves exactly where I needed to. And we turned around. And not only did we turn around, I mean, we're like 100% up from that, right? I never thought we'd be here today, but you know, we turned around and we went from, you know, the 20 million to 30 to 40. And so that just built up the momentum. And as an entrepreneur, there are days where you walk alone. You are all alone, right? Mm-hmm. And you're responsible for everybody's earnings that is inside your company. But those days I felt like, oh my gosh, you are on your own to turn around the ship. And so those are some learning points that I've had, and to have faith that there will be brighter days. And so this is the one thing that I always tell entrepreneurs, like my idea of what is success. Mm-hmm. And let's take monetary gains aside. Every time we have somebody that interviews with our company, the first thing I ask, what's your talent? What's your gifts? Right? We want to get that out of the way. What are your God-given talents, and what are you meant to do on this earth? What is your purpose, right? I have a lot of people like, oh, so-and-so, they're making a killing off of it. They're making a killing off of real estate. They're making so much money. I need to do that, right? Especially in this state.
Yeah.
It's very clicky. You do what your neighbor's doing. Mm-hmm. I always say, oh my gosh, that is a disaster, right? Why would you want to do what somebody else is doing? That's their journey. That's their purpose. That's not your purpose, right? What are your intentions? Is it to be like them, or is it to fill your purpose?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I even have a lot of, I'm talking to the women here. I have a lot of stay-at-home moms that will say, oh my goodness, you're so accomplished. Like, I'm just a stay-at-home mom. And I stop them on their tracks. I'm like, wait a minute. Don't say another word, because first of all, I have three children of my own. My partner has five. And I always say, you know, being a mom and working in business, it's very difficult. There is no balance. Sorry, yeah. There just isn't. Being a mom and having children, raising children, I feel like it's an eternal investment, right? And how do you know that's not your journey and purpose in life to raise those children? And how do you know that tomorrow they're going to grow up and change the world? Right? So I feel like everybody has their purpose, and that's true success, right? It's not making a bazillion dollars, right? That's not the point. The end goal is, what are your gifts and talents, and how are you going to better your community?
Yeah.
What does the universe want you to do on this earth? What is it that is your calling? Once you find that calling, you will succeed beyond success, because that's what you are meant to do. So once you align that frequency and you find that, and a lot of people are asleep, right? Because there's so many flashing lights telling you what you need to look like, what you need to earn, what you need to drive, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So we have all of these outside influences, and really it's taking the time to really meditate and know, am I doing what I need to do?
Mm-hmm. I think that is super important, because you can just go along and do what is the new hot trend, and you can make a quick buck. But number one, you're never going to feel satisfied. And number two, you're not going to be able to have nearly as much monetary success either, unless you're doing what you are supposed to be doing. Because I found that the more time you spend doing what you're passionate about and what you want to do to help the world around you, the better compensated you are, because people just know that, and they can feel that connection, that passion that you have about what it is that you're doing. So I want to ask you that question now, because that was just really eye-opening for me. What would you say is your calling within, I guess, BOEM and just here in the world?
Yeah, so I feel like I have many things. And so I think for me, it's just expressing my artistic vision. For me personally, I'm a very dramatic person, right? And so I like to see drama. I like to create drama, and it visually. So it's funny, growing up, I'm telling my counselor, right? Like, everybody goes through the counseling stage. Like, yeah. What do you want to do when you grow up? And I'm telling them, like, oh, I could be a photographer. I could be a designer. I could do this, this, and that. I could do interior design. Like, I could do all these things, right? And they just laughed at me like, honey, you have to pick one thing, right? And it's funny, because today I do all those things. I have to critique the photography. I have to critique the store environment, the designing. So everything is in that umbrella. And so for me, it's that artistic visual drama that I bring. And I mean, I have several other things, of course, in my personal life and my hobbies,
yeah,
that I like to contribute to my own community. But, and obviously running the company is in my path.
Mm-hmm. I think that is
I mean, that's spot on. I love hearing that. I love hearing what gets you excited, because obviously that's been able to contribute a lot to your successes that you've been able to find, both personally with your personal fulfillment, I'm guessing, and also just in the business world too. I want to jump a little bit back into more of like the business side of things now for our listeners out there. So there's a couple things I want to touch on. The first one is I want to just discuss, because you talk about how you have to be super in touch with your customers and the whole customer experience. Like, that's just so important for not only your business, but just for everybody's business too. If you offer the same product as someone else does, but you offer it in a more impactful way, they're going to come back to you and not your competitor. So I want to talk a little bit about how you go along doing that in your business. And then also I want to touch on the more of the retail side, because I know that some of our listeners out there maybe have one retail experience or one retail store, but they're looking to expand because they've seen growth. So let's start with the customer experience side. How do you go about kind of designing that customer experience and making sure that all of your customers really feel taken care of and supported from start to finish?
So I want to take actually our City Creek flagship stores and as an example. And so when we did that concept, you walk through the store and we wanted to play to all your five senses, right? And it's really a sensory experience going through. And so we wanted to take some of our roots. Like, a lot of it has some of our culture backgrounds, a lot of the symbols in there. I mean, we had seating areas to make sure that the guy you're with has somewhere to sit, right? There's three different sitting areas. I mean, and as you navigate through the store, you wanted to feel like, oh, this could be like your own home that you're walking through. And then as you go through the fitting room, I actually had these padded walls inside. And so it's like your own little sanctuary in there. And so the feeling of the velvet walls with the dim lighting, like, it's the whole sensory experience is just like no other. And I wanted to make sure that the employee lounge, that they had a nice place to take a break. Like, we had floor to ceiling windows looking over, you know, Main Street. And I put Italian marble in there, right? And the best lighting and oak floors, because usually in a retail setting at the mall, what do you see? A dirty microwave in a dirty stock room. Mm-hmm. That's what you get to take a break, right? And so this is separate from everywhere else. So not only for the customer experience, it's for the employees, right? And so we wanted to bring that culture in. And so that's our experience throughout the store in that journey, and also bringing it online, right? Our imagery, our communication, our photography. We take a lot of work, you know, a lot of testing, a lot of thought and care behind it. We don't just slap a photo, right? Everything is measured. Mm-hmm. And we train our staff. That's our culture in here, right? Our culture is very much to win. And I'll tell you, it's hard working for Bohm. It's not that easy. Like, we expect a lot out of our people, but at the end of the day, they're happy.
So I think that that's super important, what you were saying about the employees, because number one, what I've seen with a lot of businesses just around me, and even some of my friends who own businesses, sometimes when things are going tough, the first place that they cut expenses is things that deal with their employees. So they take away a lot of the luxuries that the employees have. They maybe downsize and just give them, like you said, a microwave and a table, and that's it. And one thing that I've seen that goes along with that is that once somebody goes that route, the employee morale tanks, which means they're not going to be as productive, which means you end up losing a lot more money. Not just in that moment, but also down the line, because it's really hard to bounce back from having low employee morale. And so I think that for me personally, the number one place that you should start if you're going to make an improvement in your company is focusing on how can I make my employee experience a lot better? Because once they feel taken care of, they're going to make sure your customers feel taken care of too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We fully believe that. And I mean, we stock the fridges. I mean, we have all these things. We feed our people. But at the end of the day, that doesn't keep them 100% satisfied, right?
Yeah.
And so employees, especially with all these millennials, which we work with, they want to be on a winning team. They want to be in an inspiring environment, right? And so we aim to do that all the time. I'm like, we have our inside book clubs. We have charity opportunities with our employees. And so we keep that going.
And I just want to touch on that too, because it's easy to say that you do that, but then maybe not follow through. But we literally had to reschedule this podcast interview because you had your employee book club. So she practices
yes,
what she preaches.
And you know what? We had everybody actually make like a vision board of what they want out of life. Right. And everybody printed their photos and we talked about like, what are their personal goals? What, this is the house they want to live in. This is the job they want. And we were looking at that and we all had to share that. And it was quite an emotional experience for everybody. And so we thought, you know what? Everybody has G-Wagons on their vision board. We're going to have to make a lot more money here, folks.
I don't blame that though. Those are nice. I love those things.
Yeah. So yeah, we love giving back and keeping that culture within.
I think it's incredible. And it speaks to what you've been able to grow as well, because you're focusing internally first. It's also showing itself with results externally too.
And let me tell you, every time somebody leaves Boehm and they, you know, move to another state, they're working for another retailer, they're always their number one employee. We train them that way.
It speaks to what you guys do here and the culture you've created.
We love career development. Like, we love seeing an associate, you know, just starting out really young, go from that to our visuals manager at the very top, right? We love to cultivate the talent that we have and grow them. And I know a lot of times, sorry, nurses, we lose our girls to nurses, to teachers, because their parents are saying, well, a mall job is not a real job. Go get a real job. It's like, excuse me, I'm sorry, but my managers are making more than the nurse and they're not working graveyard on Sundays.
Yeah.
Yes, I love nurses. Yes, we need them. But at the same time, you know, we have lots of amazing opportunities within us.
For sure. So I want to get your advice for our listeners out there who may have a customer-facing business. What are some tips that you would give to an entrepreneur about how to create a solid customer experience?
So as far as customer service, you want to clean up all the problems before they're even asking it, right? Doing your due diligence is the best thing. Figuring out all the problems before your product even goes out, so you have less questions, right?
So what is it that you guys do to provide that quality customer experience in the store, in person?
So being an in-mall retailer, we're used to you walk in the store, you don't get much help. It's a self-help, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's about online. You don't talk to a person, but we believe very differently. We go through layers and layers of training of how to help your customer. This is the culture. When I started, I used to have a sewing machine on the counter. I used to sew everybody's denim. Like, we didn't have two-part coverage, so I just have my sewing machine out. I would, you know, alter their jeans for them within 15 minutes, and they'd be happy. And so that culture, we stayed within the company. Like, our girls, they send out handwritten notes. They know what's going on in their customers' lives. It's a lot different than a number. Like, we have an online chat with all of our stores, and we talk about, oh my goodness, I just helped somebody get a dress for their parents' funeral. Wow. Okay. I'm so happy I was able to be a part of their lives. And so all of these experiences build up. And I have my friends that go in the store, any store, and they say, oh my gosh, this is the best customer service I've gotten in the entire center. Yes, that's what we pride ourselves. We're not just trying to sell you things. It's not about that. We want to help you, right? Yeah. Find what you need, look your best, and provide that one-on-one customer service that it seems like a foreign thing in 2021,
exactly.
Right?
That's what I was going to say. Nobody really does that, especially in the days of COVID. Now everyone's taking that as an excuse to distance themselves even more from the customers. They don't really interact as much one-on-one, when in reality, that's what builds that customer interaction.
Yeah.
Like, I own a window cleaning company, and window cleaning is the most basic of services. Like, I love what I do and I love the people I meet, but anybody can go buy a bucket and start a window cleaning company. It's not that difficult. But what sets us apart and what we really try and focus on is that customer interaction. Because yes, we can go provide that service, but it doesn't matter because someone else can do that. So what keeps our customers with us, it's making sure they have that quality interaction with our employees, making sure that those customers feel like family and that they're being heard and listened to. And that's what's really important, whether it be in retail, whether it be in services. Like, that's what you have to do with your customers, just make them feel heard and feel special. That's what creates brand loyalty, I feel like, a lot of the time.
So the other thing, I mentioned this before, I want to touch on this really quick before we start winding down. With you guys expanding and now being in, what is it, 17 stores open?
Mm-hmm.
How do you go from one store to now having 17? Because I want to talk a little bit for our entrepreneurs out there who may be in the growth stage of their company now. They've already proven the concept. They have one successful location. What is it that you guys did to be able to multiply that and make sure that, number one, it wasn't just being another building that was open, making sure that the customers had the same experience regardless of what location they went in. And number two, making sure that all of those businesses and locations could be successful.
Yeah. And so that comes down to people, right? We had the right people. And there's layers of management, you know, district managers down to the managers, down to your area managers. And so we had those layers in place. And that's what really manages all the stores. So it's your people, right? And then they first need to be trained under your wings so they can drink the same Kool-Aid you're drinking, right? And instill that to the stores. And so that's our biggest mission is to the way we started our customer service. I mean, we've even taken clothing to people's houses because they didn't want their husbands seeing it, right? So really instilling that culture and making sure that the people
it trickles down
under you trickles down the way it's supposed to. So that's been our success. I feel like it's having the right people.
Now, do you think that has to do more with hiring or with training?
Training, constant training. It's not a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have training on a weekly basis, right? We measure. It's not just saying, oh, here's your goal. No, we follow up every single week.
And I think that's incredible and super important because I personally haven't worked in retail, so I don't know the industry that well. But I know in a lot of industries, especially when it's something that some people would consider entry-level jobs as just being like a cashier or something, they just leave those people to the side and let them do their job and they don't focus on training them. And so it's super important to not only have one training, but follow up on those training and on the things that you're teaching your employees, like you mentioned. So I love that. And I think that's important regardless of what industry you're in. And then the other part of that that I wanted to talk about with the retail side of it and the growth side is how do you go about determining what would be a successful location, like where you want to grow to next? What are some of the things that you look for in a potential location that you want to expand in?
So back then it was a little bit different, as in we didn't have that online presence nationwide. But now it's really based on a lot of our online sales and what cities are growing. And so as we look now, I mean, we're looking Texas, we're looking at Washington, we're looking at San Fran, Seattle, right? We're looking at all these bigger cities as potential stores to open.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think has really been influenced by web sales.
Okay. So you tend to move or gravitate towards the places where you are already seeing a good presence online.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a great strategy to take into consideration if you have a web-based store. So what about if you don't have a web-based store? Like say, for example, it's a local restaurant or something that you have to get just there in person because it's made fresh. What advice would you give somebody in that scenario who is looking at opening up a location? Like, what are some of the top things for them to look for?
Traffic.
Okay.
That's your number one, right? From one street to another, completely different.
Yeah.
So traffic, actual people traffic. And I know what people are saying, brick and mortar, who's doing that, right? This whole retail apocalypse. What people don't understand about the retail apocalypse is that stores are very profitable, even more than online. So they're forgetting
really?
That.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about all your operating costs for online and your online advertisement. I mean, right
That's
now true. It's very competitive. It's not like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's very expensive to do business online. And especially in women's clothing, you have a lot of returns online and things like that. And so in the stores, you don't have as many. So as far as growing and knowing where to open, for us, it's usually down to traffic and what your brand is.
Okay.
Like, who do you want to hang with,
right?
What's your lifestyle? Because that will tell you where your customer is, right? Where's your customer? Are they in a high-end center? Are they in maybe a strip mall, right? So knowing where your customer lives lives, as in where they shop and where they tend to go to, that's obviously where I would go. But, and the biggest thing with the whole retail apocalypse is not that nobody wants to go out to the mall. Nobody wants to go to a 1970s looking mall.
Yeah.
Duh. I mean, sorry, but you have all these old white male making all these decisions, right? And they're not understanding that
it doesn't resonate with other
generations. The old has to die. And the people that we're hearing about that are closing, I mean, they're not innovating, right? So, I mean, you have Warby Parker. It's opening up hundreds of stores. Yeah. They're not suffering in brick and mortar by any means. So there's lots of opportunities, but people want to go to centers and places that look up to date, right? So why the heck would you go to a Starbucks when you can make a cheaper, faster cup of coffee in your house?
The experience.
Want the experience. You still want to be seen.
Yeah.
And you still want to see people. If 2020 has taught us anything, was that being locked in your house in front of a computer screen is not good for your mind.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we still need that experience.
Oh, I love that. I think that is all spot on. Super great and actionable advice for our listeners. So right before we end with our lightning round, I want to ask you, what would be the first three things that you would do if you were restarting your business today?
Be frugal with your cash. Don't compare. Just because somebody else has a fancy, nice office doesn't mean you need it right away, right? Set your expectations really, really high. I know, you're thinking, what? Yeah, dream really, really big.
I think that's great. I think those are super important for everyone to keep in mind. And to wrap up, I always end with what I call my lightning round. So just a bunch of quick fire questions just to see what you think. So the first one would be, what would you say is your personal biggest fear?
Personal biggest fear? One of the things might be not spending enough time with my children, right? Because they're so little. And so you want to see every step of them growing up and me being so busy and tied up in a million things. And so not having that enough time as they grow, right?
Yeah.
Time is probably my biggest fear, and not having enough of it on a 24 hours. I feel like I need 48 hours a day.
Yeah, that's good. The next question is, what would be your personal definition of failure?
My personal definition of failure would be not serving my purpose, whatever that is. It has nothing to do with monetary gains. It has to do with, did I do what I needed to do on earth? So
I love it. That's a great one. The next one is about habits, because I know that success comes after a long period of time and sustained effort. So what is one habit that you have in your life that has helped contribute to your success?
Patience, Diego, right? Is that in Lion King? So having patience and not having everything now, the way I want it, how much I want, just being patient and not coveting what other people have, doing things on my own time.
I think that's important, because a lot of times as entrepreneurs, especially, we have that dream mentality of, we want to create this life for us, this incredibly successful life, and we want it now. And so when we aren't able to buy that G-Wagon immediately, like we were talking about earlier, sometimes it can be really hard for us to stay on the path and keep doing those consistent efforts day in and day out. So I think that is top notch, and I love it. And then I love reading. I think reading is one of the most important things for personal growth and for business growth too. So for you, what would you say would be your favorite book that you've read, or your most impactful book?
So one of my favorite books is The One Big Thing by Phil Cook. And I love that book because as entrepreneurs, there are so many things that we want to do, and we're wearing multiple hats and we want to fix everything right away. But in this book, it teaches you to, whoa, step back. What is one thing that you can do right, and how to space out your time?
That is good. I've heard of that book. I haven't read it yet. So that's going on the list, because I've heard many good things about it. So for our listeners out there that want to learn more about your story and about your brand and want to go shopping there, because your stuff is incredible, where can they find more about you?
So just you can visit our website, bohme.com. Also visit our Instagram @shopbohm.
Go check them out. They're great. She's great, as you've heard here.
Seriously, thank you so much for spending the time with me today to talk about this. I know that it's been really entertaining. I've had a really great time just talking, and I've learned a lot too about not only how to be successful in business, but really how to find success individually. And it all comes down to following your purpose in life and just making sure that you're on that right path.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course.
If you made it this far and listened to the entire episode, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. This is seriously something that I'd love to do, and I've done it for free ever since the beginning, spending my own money to be able to produce these for you. So if you appreciate the work that I've been doing and you appreciate and value the content, I would love it if you left a rating and review and just let me know what you've liked and what you want to see more of in the future. Thanks, and until next week, keep failing your way towards achieving your dreams.